I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 16th of July. Milwaukee has earned a reputation as a hub of commercial sex exploitation, especially of minors. The Human Trafficking Task Force of Greater Milwaukee has launched a new awareness campaign, Children Are Not For Sale. We'll talk about this extremely troubling issue with two guests this hour. Debbie Zwicky is Chief Operating Officer at St. Rose Youth and Family Center, and she serves as a member of the Milwaukee Human Trafficking Task Force. She has worked with adolescent girls and their families at St. Rose for 25 years, and Lad Lake has been counseling and working with exploited and abused girls at its St. Rose campus for 150 years. Also joining us in our Milwaukee studios, Danelle Hauser, who is the Chief Program Officer at Lad Lake, and we are going to welcome phone calls during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. So we welcome your calls. Danelle and Debbie, thank you very much for being with us. Moving close to the mics, if you would, please. Who would have thought? I mean, I read that statistic at the beginning, a hub of sex trafficking in the country? I think nobody knows about this. Why are we the hub?
Yeah, there are a lot of thoughts behind that idea. One of them is because of the poverty and the unemployment rates in the Milwaukee area. And other experts have also indicated that it's because there is somewhat of a culture of acceptance. And there's a lot of work being done to change that. CERV has done a campaign to say our children are not for sale.
Mm-hmm. And when we talk about sex trafficking, tell us exactly what we're talking about, Debbie.
We're really, I think, talking about people who are exploited sexually, and sex trafficking can have some specific definitions, and there are definitions out there. There's a federal definition. There's definitions kind of used within the community of Milwaukee that have been accepted with within the community of people working with these young people. But it's really talking about them being forced, are words that are used in those definitions, coerced. Sometimes it's what we call survival sex, where young people are using sex to survive, to get food, clothing, shelter, basic needs met, because they're living in situations where those basic needs just are not getting met for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a complex definition.
And it affects primarily, although not exclusively, African-American girls who are very young.
Yes, the average age typically is about 13.
13? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why so young?
I think at that age, you're very vulnerable. I think at that age, those young people are starting the journey of adolescence. And adolescence is a very difficult time, and you're figuring out who you are, who you want to be. A lot of that has to do with boundaries. A lot of that has to do with affection, love, how you feel about that, and your definition yourself within your experience and your world and your environment of what that means. And for a lot of these young people, a lot of them have a trauma history, we're finding, and some of those boundaries and those definitions get very different, or their ideas of those get very different, and it makes them very vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. From some of the stories I've read, it really sounds like a kidnapping situation, that some of these young girls may be unaware of what's going on. They're trying to get money to feed a drug habit or whatever, and they're really kidnapped from a location and blindfolded and taken into custody somewhere, and then they have like a pimp, and they have to perform sex and turn over their money. Is that an accurate description?
Yeah, there are situations that are like that. What we found by talking to the young people that we're working with is that's not the most common experience. You know, it's more of the experience that it's something that happens to them where they're not pimped out. It's something that it happens to them on an everyday basis, or it could be with family members. It could be with boyfriends that they know and have relationships to, but they're still in the community somewhere.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. A lot of times it's, you know, young adult men, young men kind of grooming these young people, and again at that 13, 14, they're very vulnerable to wanting to be loved or accepted by the opposite sex. And these young men are very good at figuring that out and how to do that for these young girls. So a lot of times it starts by them, you know, maybe meeting at the mall or meeting online or meeting up at a friend's party or what have you. And they're very nice to them and very good to them, and they buy them things, and the girls like that and accept that. And for a lot of these girls, again, they're not getting that in a lot of other places in their life, that acceptance, that love, that affection. So they like it, and then it turns different after a while.
So their home lives, would it be fair to say, are fairly rocky? Many of them?
Yes, they have a lot of challenges at home, at school, in the community. Absolutely. We also find that a lot of them really struggle with a lot of mental health issues. And so that can affect, you know, their boundaries, their decision making, those types of things.
Mm-hmm. And when did the city really decide to put a focus on all of this? There are now bus stations have announcements, children are not for sale, really address this as a problem in this city.
I would say it's probably been over the last maybe 5 years or so, where some entities have become involved through the city, through the county, some task force have been established, and people have really been starting to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. And how do you even find these girls? How did they make their way to you?
Yeah, they could make their way to us. We have an array of services that we provide at Ladd Lake, and so they could be the young women that come to us with a crisis stabilization program, who are with us for a couple of days, and we're starting to identify and talk to them about what has been their experience. So they could be on interacting with our programs like that. They could be affected with our residential program. They could be with our independent living program as well. And so what we're finding as we're raising awareness and asking more questions is this been a part of your experience? Have you been exposed and sexually exploited? And sometimes the young women are running to us and saying, yes, this has happened to me. It's a really tricky thing to get them to talk about their stories, and it's required to have a trusting relationship with them, and not just asking for asking's sake, but asking knowing that we're going to do something about it and help and support them through. And so we're continuing to expand in how we can support them.
Mm-hmm. And is it both of your senses that this is an underreported problem in this city?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yes.
And I think there's a number of reasons for that. You know, just like a lot of the domestic violence issues and that kind of thing. Part of it, when you talk about working with young people, is they don't always see it as how we're talking about it. Mm-hmm. They don't see themselves as victims. They don't see themselves as being exploited. They don't see themselves as being trafficked. So it is key that we are mindful of that when we're talking to these young people about this, because if you ask them in that way, a lot of our kids will say no, because they just don't see themselves in that position. You know, they see it as, that's my boyfriend. You know, he's not exploited. That's my boyfriend. That's you know, that's the kind of relationship I'm in.
Mm-hmm. So it's hard for you when you're working with them to get them to see this in another way that really isn't your boyfriend?
Sometimes, yeah, and that's a challenge. You know, that can be a challenge, and those are things that we work with them, you know, through different ways and using different language that makes sense to them, you know, to get to what's happening in their lives and what their experiences are, so that we can help them with that and get them to a point where they accept the help.
Mm-hmm. And how do they find their way into this elaborate, extensive program that you have? Is it through the criminal justice system in some way, or are they referred? How are they referred to you?
Sure. They can come to us through the wraparound Milwaukee, so they can be referred to us through that, identifying them based in the community. And we do have some of the young people that we work with that do come through the court system.
And it's a very intensive program. I would imagine that many of these young people are dealing with just a host of problems, with the problems at home and problems with addiction, serious addiction at times, problems of just trying to find a path to a life.
Yes, yes. So a lot of times you're working with multiple, you know, issues that they're working through. And like you mentioned, a lot of times those are families and family systems and relationships within families, school, education, their cognitive level, their cognitive skills, where they are kind of developmentally as an adolescent, mental health issues, like I mentioned before, and all of those kind of weave within each other and affect each other. So they're really, you know, coming in with a lot of complex issues and complex trauma.
What are the mental health issues?
We see a lot of girls dealing with anxiety issues. We see girls dealing with conduct disorder. We see girls and the boys that we work with dealing with the mental health issues, depression, family issues. And a lot of them are things like how they process information, some cognitive skills, how they read social cues, you know, some of those things that affect your relationships and how you deal with other people.
Mm-hmm. And you remove them, it sounds like, pretty much completely from their lives of dire poverty and incredible numbers of problems to a residential facility where they are there for a long period of time, aren't they?
Yeah, so although we work with a number of girls in different levels of programming, so crisis stabilization to independent living, but we did, about a year and a half ago, we partnered with the state and developed a specialized program serving sexually exploited young women. And so in that particular program, we serve around 6 women at a time. It is more intensified, it's very focused, and it is a longer-term placement for the young people. Because what we found is it's not a process that you can rush. So you're working through them to restore and rebuild and heal from the experiences that they've had, to demystify the culture that they have maybe glamorized or been convinced that, you know, this is ideal, this is good for you, it's a way for you to make money. And so that takes a process. And so, yes, there is a time that we protect the young people as a safe haven against the temptations of what their communities have been brought to them. And then we work closely with the families as well to help get them back into the community and to provide that support network to keep them out of those experiences or falling back into those unsafe behaviors.
Mm-hmm. And how hard is that to make? I would imagine it's extraordinarily difficult. The circumstances of mm-hmm. their lives don't sound anything near good. So if you're going through this residential program to work out a better life and then you're returning to a life in a community that doesn't have a lot to offer you, what do you do?
And that's why I think it's real important, like Danelle mentioned, that we use the family engagement piece and really engage the family in the process as the young people are also going through the treatment programs so that the family has an idea of what we're doing and how we're helping them. And really our goal is to help both. Because like you said, that is a big challenge. If you just focus on the young people, then they go right back into those communities and the families that are struggling. So for it all to work well, it has to be a combination. You have to work with, you know, the families, the community, the young people. All of those people have to be involved.
Right. And we should say, I won't mention her by name, but we were to have a young woman with us who started down this path when she was very, very young, and she didn't come today, and you're worried about where she is. And I think we should probably, without talking extensively about her life circumstances, but the fact that she has disappeared for a while, that it's not you work with everybody and their lives are turned around immediately. There are a lot of problems to be encountered along the way.
Right. And young women and young men who experience this kind of trauma or that, it does require ongoing supports and ongoing ways of overcoming these challenges that they bump across, of how to cope with some things. If life hits you in a certain way, how do you deal with it and how to cope with it? And so we really focus on providing those supports. If they don't have a family, some other supports in the community to help them through when they get into these tough spots.
Mm-hmm. Are there young people without families who are in foster care or...
Yes.
We do, yeah. We have a couple different programs. The supervised independent living programs are those young people who are in foster care and they're aging out and they haven't been adopted throughout. And so we work with them in helping them to get safe living environments in the community, as well as keeping them engaged in education and employability. So that's part of our services that we provide. And that really prevents, coming back to the issue of sexual exploitation, if they have a job, if they have a safe place to live, they're less vulnerable to this kind of being pulled into this culture of, here, let me provide your basic needs, and then in turn, you end up doing things that are unsafe for you.
Do you have success stories?
Yeah.
Yeah. What are they?
I think that varies, and it's very individualized. You know, success for one young person may look very different than success for another person. So it kind of depends on where they started, what their goals were to get to. But, you know, doing this for quite a few years, as was mentioned at the beginning of the program, I have kids. I still call them kids. Call me back often, and that's really? Honestly what keeps me doing this is them calling and saying, you know, I graduated from this program, or I'm now enrolled back in school, or I understand why you had us go through the things that we did, whether it was a group or an activity, or, you know, they can get to a point where they understand where we were going with their treatment and trying to help them. And again, that can be, I get a lot of calls when, you know, they start their own families and start to utilize some of the work that we did with them and start to understand it, where they come to a good place in their family. Maybe they're not able to live together anymore, but they're able to have some communication now with their family, and it's positive and it's healthy. To me, that's success. To me, it's success if they're, you know, living within the community and being part of that community in a positive way. And I think it's success when they really start to take in the information and the support that we've provided for them in the time that they were in our program and start to understand why that's important.
Mm-hmm. And tell me more about that support. What is it
that they need in the communities?
That you give them.
Sure.
What kind of support?
So in the aging out population, so after they're aging out of foster care, we have a program that's called our Connections Program. And so if young people are in a place where they need some additional supports that are in the community, they'll call us. So after they've graduated and gone on, they'll reach back in and say, this is what's happening in my life. Can you provide me some direction and resources to get back on track for that?
Mm-hmm. It is something that you read about, which is interesting to me, as another kind of problem in another part of the world. You hear about human trafficking frequently and what a problem it is in countries like Thailand and other countries in the East, usually. The fact that it exists here is something that I think people probably would say, I don't believe that's happening here.
It's happening here. And it's not just the city of Milwaukee. It's the suburbs. It's, you know, in different parts of the state, it's in other states. We've had, you know, incidences where young people have been, you know, traveling around and have been, you know, taken to different cities and those types of things. So it's happening.
Mm-hmm. We welcome phone calls for both our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. This came to our attention through a series of articles in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and rather dramatic story. Milwaukee has earned a reputation as a hub of commercial sex exploitation, and in the fall of 2013, Ladd Lake opened a specific residential campus to offer a safe haven for girls who are involved or impacted by the sex trade. It is the only residential treatment facility for youth survivors of this kind of trafficking in Wisconsin, and one of the few facilities of its kind in the country. We have two guests with us in our studios in Milwaukee. Debbie Zwicky is Chief Operating Officer at St. Rose Youth and Family Center, serves as a member of Milwaukee's Human Trafficking Task Force, and she has worked at St. Rose for 25 years. Danelle Hauser is also with us, Chief Program Officer at Ladd Lake. And did I give you the number? I do it all the time. I forget. Once again, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for both our guests. Emily in Janesville is our first caller. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Well, there's a number of things I wanted to bring up. First of all, this is an issue that I have been following for probably 10 to 15 years. I have family from Eastern Europe, including one member of my family who survived the Bosnian War, and she really made me aware of the trafficking issue as it was emerging at that time. Mm. She herself never experienced it, but she observed what was happening in sort of transnationally at that time. And so she kind of got involved in making people aware of it. And through her, I learned a great deal about the subject. and I followed it since then. I am pleased, if that's a right word, although I'm not sure that it is. I'm glad to see that more attention is being paid to human trafficking locally. I've attended a few presentations, but I am concerned that perhaps people don't understand the links between not only human trafficking and sexual abuse or sexual violation, but other kinds of situations like domestic violence. And if you could speak particularly to the way that perceptions are changed, or kind of that crazy-making dynamic, which where a distorted reality seems to be the new normal. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Emily, for the call. Thank you. Debbie, you want to take that first?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of similarities that we see also with the young people, where they have a history of the things that she was talking about, and they all kind of, especially the sexual abuse, we see a lot of that with the young people. And there's definitely been, in my experience, a lot of correlation between the young ladies and the young boys who get involved in the commercially sexually exploitation stuff, the human trafficking stuff, are definitely also dealing with those issues. And for some of them, you know, that really distorts their boundaries and their definitions of love and affection and that type of thing. And it's definitely all connected. That's been our experience that we have seen, absolutely. And it does start to distort their perceptions and their reality. And that is super important for people, especially people working with these young people, to understand is you have to understand where they're coming from and what their reality is and what in their past has created that reality to get it to where it is, mm-hmm. and start there with them and help them, you know, to create a new reality for themselves. And that's what we really hope happens when they come to our programs, is we expose them to a new reality, if you will. And not to say that everything they did up to now is bad, because I don't think that's helpful, but we just want these young people to understand there are different options and there are different ways, and not all the adults moving forward in your life are going to treat you like possibly all the adults have prior in your life. And there are different types of adults and different types of worlds out there that you can choose to be a part of if you want to, and we'll help you do that. Mm.
So you're giving them hope too, which is
absolutely,
you have a difficult job,
and that's super important. Without hope, why are we all doing this?
Right. Absolutely. How often are you dealing with, and I would imagine this would be a very hard part of the job, the young person who was supposed to be with us was struggling with heroin addiction at a very young age. How often are you dealing with the young people having to break addictions, and how difficult is it for them to break the addictions?
We see a lot with addictions. Not so much the heroin, but I know it's becoming a much larger issue in this community and in the suburban communities, mm-hmm. around the city of Milwaukee, that a lot of families are struggling with that, and a lot of young people are struggling with that. We see a lot of kids struggling with marijuana use, alcohol use, and the addiction just kind of feeds into all of the other things that they're dealing with. And for a lot of them, it's a coping skill to feel a little bit better about things, you know, for that short period of time where you're using.
Right. Thanks, Emily, very much for your call. Richard is next. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I'm a trucker, and the state troopers, at least in Iowa, are handing out things. I was at a way station. There's Truckers Against Trafficking. They've got a hotline.
Really?
888-373-7888. There's a website, PolarisProject.org, where you email them. They even gave you some questions to ask. You know, you ask the person, are they getting paid? Are they being watched? Are they free to leave? And if you hear bad answers to any of that, they recommend you get on the phone and call so that those persons can be rescued.
Well, thanks very much for the information. Is this new? Are you're aware of this?
Yeah, they've actually come to the Milwaukee area several times and done some conferences regarding the work that they're doing, and given out some materials that he was referring to, bringing in the people working in that industry, law enforcement, so that they're all aware of the work that they're doing and that they can utilize those materials.
And Danelle, what is legislation? There was legislation passed recently, I think. think, in the state of Wisconsin dealing with this whole issue. What was that?
Mm-hmm. It's called Strengthening Child Welfare Response to Trafficking Act. That was passed in January of 2015, so just recently. And the focus of that particular act is requiring all states to have a process of identifying and assessing the prevalence or the impact or the exposure of the young people that they're working with that have been sexually exploited in one way or another. And then in addition to that, they're required to have developed resources to help the young people and the families who are struggling with these issues. And the state did reach out to Ladd Lake a few times to help identify a process to implement. You know, what does this mean? And as we mentioned before, it's difficult to find out the prevalence of this because it's not an easy topic that people can talk about or ask about or, you know, the victims to even talk about.
I'm sure. I don't know if you're still with us, Richard. Have you ever called that number? Richard? No, he's gone. Our number is 800-486-8655. Does it make sense to move to reach out to others, the trucking community? Are there other communities that you are reaching out to or that need to be reached out to determine the extent of the problem and to get some help?
I know there are organizations in the community also reaching out to the hotels and motels in the area because a lot of the trafficking help happens in the hotels and motels in the area, so they are reaching out to those places and helping them understand and things to kind of look for when people check into those hotels, when people are staying in those hotels, if there's a lot of people coming in and out of the room, if there's a lot of young people, you know, looking for those signs and helping them be a part of the solution in the community.
What about prosecutions for those cases where young people are taken and they may say they're in love with the person who's arranging all of this for them, but it's obviously highly, highly illegal activity? Are there prosecutions? Have there been?
There have been, yes. And that's some of the legislature also that's being talked about and looked at right now is, you know, especially the young people that are being prosecuted for prostitution in those instances and how much sense that makes and looking more toward getting them services and programs and help with, you know, the fact that they're young people and struggling with this versus prosecuting them. So there is some stuff in the works right now that some people are working on.
Is there a lot of prosecution of the young people?
It happens.
I don't know what the exact number is, but have heard of a couple of recent cases where diversion was allowed. So even though that the law hasn't been passed where you can't prosecute the young people who are involved in this, right now the Wisconsin statute does allow for the case to be deferred for treatment, and that has happened with a couple of young people that we're working with.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the young men who are involved. Are we talking about a significant number of young men?
It's probably not as significant as the young women, but, you know, my guess would also be they don't report as much. You know, there's a whole difference between the genders and the stigma and those types of things. But, you know, we're seeing it. We're seeing a lot in the angle of kind of the survival sex and, you know, young men getting involved to meet their needs and their basic needs and those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Matt is next in Janesville. Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Hi.
Before I get to my comment, I just wanted to mention that I have a relative that's a trucker, and he said it's not uncommon to see these little 15-year-old white girls running around truck stops, getting out in and out of a van. And that leads into my next question, which is, why is it so hard to bust these guys that are taking advantage of these girls? When I read about some of these incidents, they'll bust these guys that are pimping these young girls out of a motel and advertising on Backpage.com. Well, if I was a undercover agent, couldn't I go on Backpage.com, find out where the girl is being offered, go there, watch, surveil the place, and bust these guys and take them off the street? When they do catch them, they get significant penalties. They're doing things like branding these girls. Mm-hmm. They stalk them. I read one about where this girl got off, before she even got off the train in Chicago, you saw that she looked vulnerable. They know how to spot them. They're troubled. Maybe they're a runaway. They'll spot them, take them, like you said, give them some food and maybe some clothes. And in two or three days, mm-hmm. they're turning tricks for, like, you know, 10 guys a day. And so why is it so hard to bust these guys?
Debbie?
I think part of it is, again, the perception that the young people have, the victims have, of testifying and talking about it, and you know, they don't see it like we see it. I know there are law enforcement that are doing some things that he had mentioned, you know, the back page and posing as a young person, and there have been some arrests made that way where, you know, they think they're talking to a young person and it's actually a police officer, and they've been able to make some arrests that way. But I think the other thing is it's such a huge scope of a problem right now. There's so many out there and what they're doing, and they're very organized. They're very,
really?
Oh, yes, huh. Yes. You know, there's a lot of money moving around. So they're pretty organized. They're pretty smart about how they move around and those types of things. And those can be challenges, I think, for law enforcement.
So there are a lot of websites that advertise this?
There are some.
There are.
Backpages is one that I'm familiar with.
Uh-huh.
Craigslist. You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Sites like that.
Yeah. To speak a little bit further about the prevention of this, you know, although, you know, prosecution and heavy consequences, which has been the focus for this type of behavior, is one way. The other prevention is kind of, if you see something, say something. If you see a young person who is vulnerable, who is at those truck stops, and hopefully his friend did, is to reach out and to make note that something's going on here, and there are hotline information that you can call into to report this kind of behavior. There's sensitive crimes if a young person does disclose to you that something happened. And so, you know, for the community to pull together and say, this is not going to be tolerated in our community, and step up and provide supports around the victims of this issue.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a hotline number?
I do. This is both for young people who need help and also anybody who is has suspicion that something is going on, and that is the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline at 1-800-888-373-7888.
And when you say there's a lot of money going on here, what kind of money? What's the source of money?
The people who are paying these young women or young men to have sex with them.
Mm-hmm. And they're paying quite a bit of money.
Yes, that's what we're hearing from the young people that we work with, hundreds of dollars.
Hundreds of dollars?
Hundreds of dollars.
Wow.
For an act.
And do we know who these people are? Do we have a sense of who the perpetrators are or not? I mean, it would be important to know that.
Yes, yes. And I think, you know, law enforcement has some ideas.
And the sting operations that you had mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. on, the Project Cross Country, is something that happens once a year. So there's often stings and building up of cases to be able to find out who those people are and who is doing this on that scale. But I think, as we had mentioned before and touched upon and want to shed light, it's not just those big rings of things,
right.
But it's happening on a smaller scale where, you know, somebody who knows somebody is allowing a sexual act to occur, and they're receiving money, and they're giving, you know, basic needs, food, clothing, and shelter to the young women. So on that level, wanting to raise awareness that that happens as well.
Yeah. So it makes more sense to call a hotline number, because if you're stepping into wanting to say something yourself, you're stepping into a whole mm-hmm. host of issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks very much for your call, Matt. Let's go to Susan in Madison. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
I'm in my 60s now. I had an adolescence that taught me a lot, and I've been reflecting for decades. And I know their efforts to teach sex education. I think a lot of them are with an eye toward, well, teens are going to be non-abstinent, so let's teach them the nuts and bolts. I think that young women need to be taught a lot more about the psychology of young men, taught that the young men are aware of them as young women, whether they pay attention to them or not. You know, young women can be vulnerable to committing acts just to get attention, just because they've been talked into it, just because someone persuades them. And, you know, whether money changes hands or not, this mm-hmm. is damaging psychologically.
Yeah.
Danelle?
Some of the work that we're doing with the young people that we're serving is educating them around the tactics of recruitment and kind of walking them through that process of what it looks like, you know, the early engagement stages, the grooming stages, and how somebody will lure them into engaging in something like that. So we are doing some considerable education of our young people, whether they have already been in this line or been exposed to that, but more importantly, I guess, for those who haven't yet accepted that piece of it, and doing that through our education programs, our independent living, and all of the young people that we come in contact, raising their awareness to be on the lookout and empowering them and instilling, you know, that you are valuable and what is a healthy relationship for you, right, and healthy treatment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
I'm sorry, Susan?
I said very good.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Thanks very much for your call. And we'll welcome more phone calls momentarily. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is @KDunnShow. We're talking about human trafficking, and lo and behold, from reading a lot about this, we've discovered that Milwaukee, lo and behold, is one of the hubs of human sex trafficking in the country. We're talking about why, who the young people are, how they're being exploited, what their lives are like, and what the road, best possible road ahead for them is, and how they can latch onto it. And welcoming your calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. Danelle Hauser is Chief Program Officer at Ladd Lake. They serve at-risk youths, and they have a year-long residential program with the Department of Children and Families for victims of sex trafficking. They've been working with women who have been sexually exploited for 150 years. Debbie Zwicky is also here, Chief Operating Officer at St. Rose Youth and Family Center, and she is also a member of Milwaukee's Human Trafficking Task Force. She has worked with adolescent girls and their families for 25 years. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to phone calls. Actually, let's go to this Facebook message before we go to more calls. Bob writes to us on Facebook, "People convicted of sex trafficking, especially of minors, should receive life sentences without parole, and those Johns who participate should also be charged and sentenced appropriately." Danelle?
I agree that the consequences for this kind of behavior of victimizing, especially vulnerable young people who have most likely experienced already trauma in their lives and abuse and neglect, should have significant consequences for their behaviors, especially if when they're corralling and eliciting more people to be involved in this. So I agree with heavy consequences.
Debbie?
I think it brings also the point that if we're going to eradicate human trafficking, which I think is the hope of all of us working in this field, and definitely the mission of the task force here in Milwaukee, is a problem that affects all of those people. You know, it's a problem that we have to look at from the perspective of everybody involved, the victims, the Johns, the pimps, the, you know, people who are recruiting these young people and these young men and these young women. If we're going to really get to the heart of this problem and make a difference, we really have to figure out how to work with all of those segments of the problem. And some of it is, you know, from a corrections point of view and consequences and that type of thing. And, you know, there's all sorts of prongs to that issue, I think. But I think it brings us to a very important issue that people need to think about, is how do we deal with all of those entities of the problem?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go next to Jeanette in Sheboygan. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have always been taught that knowledge is responsibility. And when I think of responsibility, I wonder how many of these children that we brought across the border are we accountable to? Are we doing something to protect them? Do we know whether or not they're, do we even know where they are? Who's taking care of them? Who's monitoring, protecting them? How many of them end up in this trade?
Do you find any people, we're looking at another issue here, certainly an immigration issue, with, but maybe you're aware of what's going on with the young children who have come across the border.
We in our programs haven't specifically worked with those types of children, so, you know, I can't speak from our programs with that issue. I could see some of those young people and those children coming over being at risk for this.
Right.
So I think it is something to be aware of and to talk about in those communities and those programs that are helping those families and those children.
Mm-hmm.
But at Ladd Lake, we haven't really specifically seen those children.
And on the federal level, there are a number of task force and the Department of Justice and contact information of how to provide supports or address and meet the needs or recover those young people. And so there are web, you know, if you look it up on the internet, there are resources to contact. And again, it goes back to, if we as a community see something, we need to act upon that.
Thanks, Janet, for your call. Our number, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. All right, so let's present the hope side of this. You're a young person, you've got a horrible home life, maybe you've been sexually abused at home, maybe you go to school, maybe you don't go to school, or you don't go to school very often. You might be drinking at the age of 10, as some of the people you work with do. You don't have anybody in your corner, really. How in the world do you present hope to young people who are living in those circumstances?
Sure. So it is, as you had mentioned, as you listed off those things, you're like, well, how on earth can anybody get past
right.
the circumstances that they have? And so we are in the business of hope and instilling back hope and healing where they have been and restoring their concept of who they are, providing that this is what the future could be like, and helping them to craft out and plan what are the steps to get to where I want to go. And oftentimes our young people aren't aware of what possibilities are there outside of what I've already been exposed to or what I see around me. And so the work that we're also about is saying, here's a picture of what life can be. It's not just what you have seen growing up, but here are some careers, here are some opportunities, here are educational pieces and supports to get out of this cycle that you have been in. And so we have developed and are continuing to develop this workforce development piece of helping the young people identify those soft skills to be employable. And we actually have programs where we are employing the young people, and we're trying to take it a step further and saying, when you go back home, finding those partners in the community to employ our young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they are making money in that way, they don't have to revert to these other resources, and they're engaged in the workforce and being productive and working their way out of the situation. So giving them those real tangible experiences and instilling hope.
Do you have a school component too? Do you get young people excited about learning in school?
We do. We have different educational programs that are specifically geared towards helping young people who have been suspended from school, expelled, or dropped out. And so we have staff that were and teachers specifically trained to deal with that population, to get them re-engaged in the educational program so that when they are out of our care, that they can get reconnected in their home school district. So we do a lot of work with that, because we know staying in school and graduation rates are going to help propel the young people for a better future.
Mm-hmm. Debbie, you've been doing this for 25 years. How do you give somebody hope?
I think we talk a lot with our staff and the people that work in our programs and our volunteers about building relationships with these kids. And I guess that's the one sustainable piece that I've seen, and I think is a hugely important piece when you work with these young people, that when you work with these families in a lot of different capacities, all the people in this community working with these young people and these families, and especially at our programs at Ladd Lake, we really talk a lot with our staff about building relationships with kids and trying to change that perception of safety. And safety is a key component to this, and we talk a lot about that in our programs, of how to make our programs safe for kids and safe in their perceptions of safe, not necessarily always our perceptions of safe. But to me, I think that's two of the big keys of providing hope for these kids and these families is having conversations about safety and how to make that happen for them within our programs and also when they leave our programs. And I think, to me, when people feel safe and when people have good support systems and they have people that they can count on and have built good relationships with and have an understanding of what that means and how you do that and how that feels, that provides hope for people.
Mm-hmm. And is working with the families, that's another whole huge element here, because they have their own set of problems, right? Are they willing to become involved in this? Do you find support for family members working with the young people, or in just as many cases are they not in the picture?
Yeah. As you mentioned, there are a lot of challenges that the family is often dealing with, you know, kind of getting their own basic needs met of what's going on with their employability. But we have found, and we've had an intentional focus on engaging the families into the process, because without rebuilding, helping the family to communicate, identifying where they want to go and how they can do that together, and some healing that has happened. We know that our young people are going to go back home, and we want them to be in their homes and in their home communities. So it's a challenge, but it's a focus, and we're fighting that fight.
Mm-hmm. A listener called and asked that we repeat the phone number to call to help victims of sexual exploitation. Phone number and any other information that you want to give us again, we'd be happy to take it.
Sure. So the phone number for the National Human Trafficking Resource Center hotline is 1-888-373-7888.
888-373-7888.
And you can also text at 233-733.
233-733. Is this something that, you know, that if Ladd Lake, if St. Rose has been working on this, I'm amazed you've been around for 150 years. That's such a long time. When you look historically at exploitation issues, I would imagine there may have been some 150 years ago, too, right?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, and I would say that, yeah, throughout the centuries that this has been an issue, and we have been more intentional over it in the past two or three years of saying, okay, how are we going to focus in and look at what research is out there, what programs are out there to help the young people that we're working with. But mm-hmm. It's been around.
Time for one more phone call. Eric in Madison. Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to call in as a final note. I tuned in a little bit late to the program, but I was really excited when I started hearing what you're talking about, because my dad is actually Gary Erdman, the former director of Ladd Lake for I don't know, 30 years, just retired.
Oh.
And this was an issue he was really, really passionate about. We had talked, you know, him and I and our family for years about this work and about the work that St. Rose does. And so he's spoken so highly of both your guests and of the work that is progressing on this very subject. I know he's tuning in right now, but I didn't know if he got a chance to actually try to call it, so I wanted to call it on his behalf, just saying, applause and great accolades to all the work that St. Rose and Ladd Lake does, especially on this topic of human trafficking.
Thank you, Eric, very much. That was a nice way to end the show. This work cannot be easy. It just can't be easy at all, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and yet you stay with it, and you have for a long time now, so you must feel as though you're making some progress.
Absolutely. I think it goes back to the hope piece that we talked about again. You know, if you don't have that, I'm not sure why we're doing all this, but I think It's hope in a lot of different ways for our communities, for the families in those communities. Families have always kind of been a passion of mine. They're very interesting to me. They're very, they're a huge part of our communities, are the families that make up those communities. And, you know, we all have things that we deal with, and we all have different places that we've been, and we all have different situations that we've been in, and we all have different abilities to cope and deal with those situations. And I think we're all kind of on this journey, and for those families, they really need support and help in that journey of healing. And I think, you know, if you remember to be a part of that, that's hopeful.
Thank you so much, both of you. Debbie Zwicky, Chief Operating Officer at St. Rose Youth and Family Center, also on the Milwaukee Human Trafficking Task Force. Danelle Hauser, Chief Program Officer at Ladd Lake. Thanks very much to both of them for being here and for the work that they do. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this program and on-air production in Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll return with another hour of conversation.